Hi, this is Betty, and I'm reading from the News Gazette on Friday, August 21st. And this is on the front page. It's got a picture of people who are showing support for the local police department. There's no story on it, but it just says defend the police. And we have the Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 57. In Illinois, there are 213,721 cases, which is an increase of 1,832, with 7,833 deaths. Champaign County, there's 1,824 cases. It's an increase of 36, with 20 deaths. In Douglas County, there's 177 cases, which is an increase of 7, with 3 deaths. Ford County, 89 cases. It's an increase of 6, with 2 deaths. Piatt has 73 cases, no increase, no deaths. And Vermilion has 268 cases. It's an increase of 4 with 2 deaths. And it says a man in his 50s who'd been hospitalized is the 20th Champaign County resident to die of COVID-19. And it is the county's first coronavirus-related fatality this month. And see. Urbana joined Champaign in forbidding large parties at residential properties in Campus Town and in apartment buildings with 3-plus units citywide. Guests are limited to 10, excluding the hosts and others lawfully living there. Ford County's 6 new cases were all linked to an outbreak at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pels, which is working very closely with us and doing what they can to get that under control, said the health department spokesman Danielle Walls. COVID-19 continues to spread throughout Douglas County, officials wrote after reporting 7 new cases, giving it 23 in 3 days. Set for 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday is a drive-through testing event at the Arcola Community Center. And we also have on the front page of the News Gazette an article by Jay Simpson, who writes a column on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. And the title of his column today is, "This Nonsense is Getting Out of Control." I miss the old days, back when you didn't have to think twice before you took your kids to shoot hoops or go to the park. Nowadays, people don't have any remorse, not even for children. They are so busy trying to gain clout and make a name for themselves that they will shoot into a crowd of innocent bystanders just to say they shot at somebody. Sad, right? Well, these are the conditions we are living under today. I'm not sure if it's the video games and music that is influencing this behavior, or if it's the lack of positive role models. So often I see children being influenced in a negative way by an adult or someone older than them. They are normalizing tragedies, which makes it hard for people to mourn because it happens so much. There are no more tears to cry. When you get numb to death and you rarely get emotional when they occur, it speaks volumes. This means it is happening too much when it shouldn't be happening at all. I remember running around the neighborhood all day worry-free as a kid because there were structure. The ones on the streets knew there was a time and place for nonsense, and when children and women were outside, there was neither the time nor the place. The youth are in serious need of guidance, and I know there are people out here in the community every day trying to make a change, but it takes a village. If we want change, we have to be the change. There is no other way around it. Okay, it also says on the News Gazette front page, flu shot could help avoid a double disease hit. And this is by Deborah Pressey. In other years, an annual flu shot is largely about, well, helping prevent the flu. This year, flu shots are also being urged as an important protective step everyone can take in the midst of a growing coronavirus pandemic. A flu shot won't prevent COVID-19, but it will help prevent more flu and flu-related hospitalizations, which have the potential to overwhelm local hospitals when combined with too many COVID-19 hospitalizations. So we're really trying to expand the reach of that flu vaccination to help keep our community safe, says Dr. Michael Smith, a Carle Emergency Room Director, Doctor and Medical Director of Carle Regional EMS. Carle Health and Christy are set to roll out mass flu shot clinics next month. Some have yet to be scheduled, but Carle will be offering two drive-through opportunities in Champaign-Urbana, plus a new walk-up flu shot clinic inside Champaign's Marketplace Mall. The mall site was chosen as a good central location on the bus line that provides an opportunity to vaccinate people while they're out and about shopping, Carle officials said. Flu season overlapping an ongoing pandemic is going to add challenges. One of them is that the early symptoms of both flu and COVID-19 are the same, he said. Both can cause fever, coughing, shortness of breath, fatigue, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, body ache, and headache. Along with similar symptoms, both diseases lack treatment options for those cases in which people are ill, but the illness isn't serious enough to require hospitalization, Smith said. Without a COVID-19 vaccine on the horizon before flu season kicks in, which is typically later in the fall, everyone doing what they can to protect themselves from flu is going to be even more important this year. The thing we can't forget as a community is influenza kills 10,000 to 30,000 Americans every year. That we do have a vaccine for. There's also a silver lining for flu season in the protective measures everyone is advised to take for COVID-19. Frequent hand washing, wearing face masks, and social distancing, none of which Americans have been accustomed to doing in years past, will also help protect people from flu and other viruses. All these things we are doing for COVID will help us, he said. Three more things to be aware of. Smith said the pandemic won't require getting a flu shot any earlier than usual this fall. Carle has plenty of flu vaccine and is hoping to boost vaccinations above last year's level. And when this flu season begins taking off, it's going to be natural for people to wonder if any symptoms they develop are flu or COVID-19. So it's important that they call their primary care doctors, seek out urgent care, or call a COVID-19 hotline for guidance. We want people to call us and let us walk them through it. Carle spokesman Jamie Mullen said. Okay, these are the flu shot clinics Carle has scheduled to date, with more to be scheduled later. For the walk-in at Marketplace Mall, 11:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, in a storefront next to Bath and Body Works, and this is the dates, between September 29th to October 22nd. Again, that's the walk-in at Marketplace Mall, 11:30 to 6:30 p.m., September 29th through October 22nd. And those are on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Okay, now we have the drive-thru at Carl at the Fields. That's over in Southwest Champaign. This is from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturdays and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sundays between September 26th and October 18th. Again, this is at the Fields from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturdays and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sundays between September 26th and October 18th. We also have a drive-thru at Carl Urbana on Windsor. This is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sundays. Again, this is for September 26th and October 18th. And again, the drive-thru at Carl Urbana on Windsor is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sundays from September 26th, between the days of September 26th and October 18th. For Christy Clinic is expecting to begin drive-thru flu shot clinics at the end of September, said Melissa Tepovich, its marketing and public relations manager. Patients are advised to check Christy's website or Facebook page for dates and locations as they become available. And I'm sure we're going to be having notifications of when those clinics are going to be in the future. Okay, what else we have here on the front page is new assessment of Urbana properties prompts appeals. And this is by Deborah Pressey. At least 20 to 30 appeals have been filed so far with the Champaign County Board of Review on reassessment of apartment properties in Urbana. Cunningham Township Assessor Wayne Williams said commercial properties in the township were underassessed, which shifts the property tax burden unfairly to residential properties. Assessments on other commercial properties in Urbana were raised between 8 and 19% depending on property type, with the 19% increases for fraternity houses, Williams said. Properties should be assessed for property tax purposes at one-third their market value, and Urbana's commercial properties are actually at 22.51%. What that means is they are 48% below where they should be. Williams said he reassessed about 249 apartment parcels in Urbana after getting a 65% response rate to a request for information he sent to property owners. He asked owners to update information on the mix of apartment units per property by bedroom and bathroom counts, the average monthly rents, the typical lease length, which amenities are included for tenants, and the normal stabilized occupancy rate as a percentage over 3 years. Failure to provide the information he warned would result in the assumption that all of the property's apartment units have 4 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms, which will result in your property being valued at top dollar. Williams said he's been willing to recalculate assessments for those apartment property owners who didn't respond but were willing to do so later. But they have to file an appeal, then fill out the survey, then I will recalculate. Among those properties where the information was provided, changes in assessment range from a 46.5% decrease to 164% increase, though the largest increase is being recalculated. Regardless of the kind of property owned, Williams said, it's important for everyone to check their assessments online before the deadline to file an appeal with the County Board of Review comes up September 10th. Dan Hamelberg, chairman of University Group, said his company provided the assessor the information he was seeking, and he thought assessments on the company's apartments in Urbana were reasonable. Last year, commercial assessments in Urbana were raised 19.1% across the board. This year, Hammelburg said assessments on some of his properties came back down. Given a currently overbuilt market for apartments, there are vacancies throughout the campus area, Hammelburg said. The assessor took that into consideration, which I think was fair. In the current environment, it's difficult to raise rents, Hammelburg said. You can't raise rents, and if you raise property taxes, it makes it difficult to manage the properties. Local appraiser Stephen Witsit said he's working on appraisals for the purpose of assessments appeals for several property managers. It's a compounding effect, he said. You're in a pandemic, tenants aren't paying their rent, and your taxes go up. And we also have here, ask the admin, a daily question for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. The question is today, one variable those in charge of ensuring the health and safety of the CU community don't want to address is the reality that a large portion of University of Illinois students will be employed by retail establishments, including grocery stores, bars, restaurants. Many U of I students who live off campus have already begun to work in CU retail establishments. Could that be why our COVID-19 numbers begin to rise into the double digits this month? The answer, we have not seen a link to the campus community with our recent cases. When we investigate, we ask about school and employment. The cases we are seeing are due to people gathering together without masking or distancing. I'm sure everybody is aware that there is a presidential race going on, and this article in Section A of the News Gazette is a call for unity. Biden vows end of national darkness in accepting nomination. And this is by Steve Peoples and Alexandra Jaffe above the Associated Press. And this is out of Wilmington, Delaware. Joe Biden vowed to unite an America torn by crisis and contempt Thursday night, while accepting the Democratic presidential nomination and achieving a pinnacle in an unfinished quest that has spanned three decades and been marred by personal tragedy, political stumbles, and more dynamic rivals. The past hurdles fell away as Biden addressed his fellow Democrats and millions of Americans at home who he hopes will send him to the White House to replace Donald Trump. Though his triumphant moment was drained of immediate drama by the coronavirus pandemic, which left him speaking to a nearly empty arena rather than to a joyous, cheering crowd. Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst, Biden declared. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. And make no mistake, united we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. The pandemic has shaken the nation and fundamentally altered the campaign. But Biden pointed to the public health emergency and the severe economic fallout to turn traits previously seen as vulnerability, notably a long career spent in elected office, into an advantage by presenting himself as a competent leader in a moment that Democrats say cries out for one in the White House. The night's keynote address was the speech of a lifetime for Biden, who at 77 would be the oldest president ever elected if he defeats Trump in November. But his convention leaned on a younger generation earlier in the night to help energize his sprawling coalition. Above all, Biden was focusing on uniting the nation as Americans grapple with the long and fearful health crisis, the related economic devastation, a national awakening on racial justice, and Trump, who stirs heated emotions from all sides. Biden's positive focus Thursday night marked a break from the dire warnings offered by Obama and others the night before. The 44th president of the United States warned that American democracy itself could falter if Trump is reelected, while Biden's running mate, Kamala Harris, the 55-year-old California senator and the daughter of Jamaican and Indian immigrants, addressed race problems in a way Biden could not. Throughout their convention, the Democrats have summoned a collective urgency about the dangers of Trump as president. In 2016, they dismissed and sometimes trivialized him. In the days leading up to Biden's acceptance speech, they cast him as an existential threat to the country. Beyond Biden's anticipated speech, Thursday's program was designed to highlight the diversity of the Democratic Party and the nation he hopes to lead. Biden's Democratic Party has sought this week to put forward a cohesive vision of values and policy priorities, highlighting efforts to combat climate change, tighten gun laws, and embrace a humane immigration policy. They have drawn a sharp contrast with Trump's policies and personality, portraying him as cruel, self-centered, and woefully unprepared to manage virtually any of the nation's mounting crisis and policy challenges. Voting was a prime focus of the convention on Thursday, as it has been all week. Democrats fear that the pandemic and the Trump administration may make it difficult for voters to cast ballots in person or by mail. Biden's call for unity comes as some strategists worry that Democrats cannot retake the White House simply by tearing Trump down. Biden needs to give his sprawling coalition something to vote for. That's easier said than done in a modern Democratic Party made up of disparate factions that span generations, race, and ideology. And next week, of course, we have the Republican convention. This also in Section A of the News Gazette. It's a national story. The title is Bannon Indicted for Fraud in Border Wall Scheme. And this is out of the New York Associated Press. President Donald Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, was pulled from a luxury yacht and arrested Thursday on allegations that he and three associates ripped off donors trying to fund a southern border wall, making him the latest in a long list of Trump allies to be charged with a crime. The organizers of the We Build the Wall group portrayed themselves as eager to help the president build a big, beautiful barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border, as he promised during the 2016 campaign. They raised more than $25 million from thousands of donors and pledged that 100% of that money would be used for the project. But according to the criminal charges unsealed Thursday, much of the money never made it to the wall. Instead, it was used to line the pockets of group members, including Bannon, who served in Trump's White House and worked for his campaign. He allegedly took over $1 million, using some to secretly pay co-defendant Brian Kolfage, an Air Force veteran who lost both legs in a mortar attack in Iraq and the founder of the project, and to cover hundreds of thousands of dollars in personal expenses. Hours after his arrest, Bannon, 66, of Washington, D.C., pleaded not guilty during an appearance in a Manhattan federal court. He is the latest addition to a startling long list of Trump associates who have been prosecuted, including his former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, whom Bannon replaced, his longtime lawyer, Michael Cohen, and his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Trump has also made clear that he is willing to use his near limitless pardon power to help political allies escape legal jeopardy, most recently commuting the sentences of longtime political advisor Roger Stone. Okay, Kolfage, 38, of Miramar Beach, Florida, did not respond to requests for comment. Also charged were Andrew Badalato of Sarasota, Florida, Timothy Shea of Castle Rock, Colorado, the owner of an energy drink company that called called Winning Energy. The company's cans feature a cartoon superhero image of Trump and claim to contain 12 ounces of liberal tears. Shea appeared at a brief virtual hearing in Denver. Other prominent members of the Wall Group included former Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, Eric Prince, founder of the controversial security firm Blackwater, former Republican Representative Tom Tancredo of Colorado, and former Major League Baseball pitcher Curt Schilling. They were not named in the indictment, however. After the arrest, Trump quickly distanced himself from Bannon and the project. When I read about it, I didn't like it. I said, this is for government. This isn't for private people. And it sounded to me like showboating, he told reporters at the White House. Okay, we also have Top of the Morning by Bob Asmussen. To Tatiana McFadden fans will want to hurry up and get a subscription to Netflix or find somebody who has one already. On Wednesday, the streaming service debuts the sports documentary Rising Phoenix. The 1 hour, 45 minute film features University of Illinois wheelchair star McFadden and many others. McFadden gets top billing in the documentary. She was also an executive producer. I hope it goes really well, McFadden said on fansided.com. I hope there are future documentaries. McFadden was interviewed for the film last fall in CU. The neat part of it is the scene of Tatiana training are here in Champaign County. U of I wheelchair track Adam Bleakney said, anybody who watches it will recognize some of the roads and cornfields. It was a major production with all the bells and whistles. Bleakney is looking forward to the film. I think they will represent the Paralympic movement honestly and provide a pretty insightful reflection on what the movement's about. At the 2016 Paralympics in Brazil, McFadden met Greg Nugent, who is one of the film's producers. It's a story that's never been told, McFadden said. The film dives into the history of the Paralympic Games, which have become one of the largest sports events in the world. You will hear McFadden's story. You also will learn about Beatrice Vio, an Italian wheelchair fencer, and Johnny Peacock, an English sprint champion. Also featured is Jean-Baptiste Allais, a French spring and long jump champion. Now 31, McFadden continues to train for the Paralympics, which are next scheduled for 2021 in Tokyo. She plans to continue working toward the 2024 and 2028 games. COVID-19 forced the Tokyo Games to move back a year. It also altered McFadden's training. With this stuff going on, you have to reshape training a little bit so you can peak at the right time, she said. And see what I have. In history, we have on this date, in 1609, Galileo Galilei demonstrated his new telescope to a group of officials atop the Campanile in Venice. In 1911, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa was stolen from the Louvre Museum in Paris. It was recovered 2 years later. In 1945, President Harry Truman ended the Lend-Lease program that had shipped some $50 billion in aid supplies to America's allies during World War II. And that is the first half of reading of the News Gazette on August 21st, and I will be back shortly, and I'll take a little break now.